Welcome back. Oh, it's bloody Maggie Thatcher and Michael Heseltine. We spoke yesterday with former NPR London Bureau Chief Michael Goldfarb on the passing of Margaret Thatcher. At the end of that segment, we played a little of this song, Merry Christmas, Margaret Thatcher, from the musical Billy Elliot, which is set in 1984 during the notorious strike by coal miners enraged at her closing of the mines. The lyrics look forward to her death. And given her passing, Michael tells us today that before last night's performance of Billy Elliot in London's West End, the audience was asked whether or not the song should even be sung. The vote was a unanimous yes, and it reportedly was an electric show. Well, Margaret Thatcher is being mourned, but there is anger at her still from people in shuttered coal mining towns and in Northern Ireland, where she is blamed for the death of 10 hunger strikers in the Maze prison. Now, these were IRA members, Catholic Republicans who violently opposed British rule, wanted a united Ireland. They faced off against the Protestant Unionists who wanted to stay a part of Britain. The results were deadly. We want to hear part of that story today from the Boston Globe's Kevin Cullen, who heard this story from a priest who was visiting Boston, as most of Kevin's stories go, and he joins us in the studio. Kevin, who was this priest?
It's Tom O'Fee, and I met Tom when I was reporting in Northern Ireland in the 80s. And by the time that Tom and I sat down, had a cup of coffee at the St. Ambrose Rectory in Dorchester, he was the primate of all Ireland. He was the cardinal, and he was the leader of all Catholics on the entire island of Ireland. And like I said, Tom and I had become friendly over my coverage of Northern Ireland, particularly the IRA. Tom came from Cross Maglen, which was the heartland of the IRA in South Armagh. And so he was one of my sources, for lack of a better term. And he also ensured me safe passage there, because Cross Maglen was not the kind of place you could go around with a notepad and start asking questions. Yeah. But when I said Tom O'Fee was a friend of mine, people would back off.
Well, he also became the voice of these hunger strikers. Mm-hmm. Now, Bobby Sands and others, were demanding status as political prisoners. What would that have meant for them?
Well, it was the ability to wear their own clothes. It was the ability for free association. And this is the point being, you know, for centuries, while the Irish were rising against their colonial oppressors that were the British, the British themselves acknowledged that they were politically motivated. They were not what they called ODCs, ordinary decent criminals. They were treated as political prisoners. But when Thatcher came in there, and you have to have some context for Thatcher, a month before she became prime minister in 1979, an offshoot of the IRA, a small splinter group called the Irish National Liberation Army, was able to put a bomb under the carriage of the vehicle of Airey Nave, who was the shadow secretary for the Conservative Party in Northern Ireland. And one of her closest friends. Mm-hmm. And he was murdered as he drove out of the... in fact, if you ever saw the movie Meryl Streep is in, when she plays Thatcher, that's a very critical scene. They show the car driving up the ramp at the House of Commons and it explodes.
So she denies them this demand, and the priest goes to make their case, please give them this status. She denies them. You could maybe understand why, since she'd had this personal loss. But so, why was the priest, as you describe it, dumbfounded in the way that she denied it?
She was dumbfounded because first of all, she sent for him. He didn't send for her, and so he goes to 10 Downing Street to talk to her. And presumably because he had helped divert the hunger strike the year before in 1980, he had been the main person to get it called off. Tom O'Fee was a complicated guy, because while he did not approve of violence, he believed that these guys had to be treated with dignity. And he was stunned that she basically said, well, you know, there's going to be no concessions here.
Because what?
And she said to him, I believe that these men are trying to kill themselves in the most torturous way to prove their virility. And Tom O'Fee told me he sat there with his mouth open to hear that a prime minister of Britain would say that.
Well, they ended up having the hunger strike, dying.
10 men dead.
And people died outside in protest. But you write that Margaret Thatcher actually had a change of heart, and primarily because of a conversation with Ronald Reagan.
Yeah, it's interesting the way it played out, because, you know, I think she herself came to realize that the hardline approach against the IRA was going nowhere. It was just perpetual violence. And it's interesting because John Hume, the great nationalist moderate leader, came to America and he spent most of his time in Boston. John told me he could not be bothered in New York. It was so crazy down there with disparate groups. But he came to Boston and he did it knowing that a lot of the power in Irish America rested here politically. So he got very friendly with Tip O'Neill. And basically, John asked Tip O'Neill, you know how Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan
former
used
House
to meet.
Speaker, yep.
Yeah, they used to meet at six. They had the 6 o'clock rule, no partisan politics. They had a beer together all the time. And John asked Tip to ask Reagan to go to Thatcher because Thatcher loved Reagan. Other than Dennis Thatcher, her husband, it's probably the man she loved the most.
She had a
crush
on Ronnie, as
she did.
Said.
And so it worked. And Reagan said, hey, listen, you need to talk to the Irish. You need to get a moderate approach here, and you got to let the unionists know this is serious. They've got to accommodate nationalists, and that's how we suck the life out of the IRA in violence, by showing them that constitutional politics, democratic politics works. And so in the end, she basically agreed. The Anglo-Irish Agreement of 1985 was reached, and it was the natural precursor to the 1998 Good Friday Agreement.
But as you say, in the minute we have left, it was too late to save a whole generation.
Absolutely.
You say Margaret Thatcher was actually the biggest recruiter for the IRA after the hunger strikers died.
No doubt in my mind. I know. I mean, I have met and talked to guys who joined the IRA because of what she did during the hunger strike. And they were not from Republican families, but they were so pissed off and angry about the way that happened.
Kevin.
Excuse me.
Public radio.
You know me.
But you make the point that, I mean, it's hard to remember, but 10 people died in a hunger strike. It's
And many, 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 many more died outside because of what happened after that.
Kevin Cullen. We'll link you to his column about Margaret Thatcher and the Troubles and his conversation and a cup of coffee with an Irish priest at hereandnow.org, and also link you to information about his new book, Whitey Bulger, co-authored with Shelley Murphy. Kevin, thanks as always for coming in.
Thanks, Robin. Sorry about the P word.
It's okay.